I think I am ready.
If you are also ready.
Yes, 1 second.
Yeah, that's fine. I also should probably know where my phone is, in case I've been getting texts.
Oh, it's on my chair.
It's on your chair.
It's on my chair!
Chair time! Boop-a-doop-boop-boop!
Have you ever played the game?
Welcome to episode number 79 of the Memory Jar. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Prestwood, and with me is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how are you doing this fine day?
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm just trying to dodge enough COVID so I can play events this summer, and that's, you know, it's not fun.
Man, that is the worst. We are in the middle of 2022, and the pandemic is still raging. We closed our last show with our guest, John Carson, encouraging everybody to stay safe. And I can't say I'm seeing a lot of people staying very safe out there.
Yeah, my partner caught COVID from her convention. I was exposed to seven people that eventually catch COVID at a conference I went to. And all of our friends are catching it. So it's pretty miserable.
Yeah, we have to restart some parts of the world and be as safe as we can. And you know what? We're still going to have exposures and get it. I'm knocking on wood. That's the sound you're about to hear. I have not yet gotten COVID. I have avoided it like the plague, as they say. So hoping to hold out on that. But we're not here to talk about global pandemics. We're here to talk about multiplayer draft sets. That's right. This is our Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate fact show.
Oh, yeah.
We were not going to do a fact show for this set, but then we kind of started like texting about it. And it turns out there are a lot of things to talk about here in our realm of dumb things we like to talk about.
This set's weird. Like there's some sections we're just not going to do because there's just too many weird cards.
Yeah, it's wild. Well, before we get too deep into it, as we always do, let us crack open the memory jar. All right, this time our card is Sky Shroud Cutter. This is a common from Nemesis. It is 3 and a green for a 2/2 beast. And it says, if you control a forest, rather than pay this spell's mana cost, you may have each other player gain 5 life. What is this doing?
So, Mercadian Masks block had a mechanic where it reintroduced alternate card costs. So there's some obvious ones, like Pulverize is a famous one, where if you control 2 mountains, I think you can sacrifice it to destroy all artifacts. There's like Submerge, which is another famous one, where if you control a forest, your opponent controls an island, or you control an island, your opponent controls a forest, you can cast for free, and it puts a green creature on top of their library. And this is a bad one.
Yeah, there's only one other card in Magic with this kind of ability. It's also green and also common and also from Nemesis. It's called Reverent Silence, 300 green for a sorcery. And if you control a forest, rather than pay its cost, you can have each other player gain 6 life. I don't know why this is 6 and Sky Shroud Cutter is 5, and that destroys all enchantments, which actually, that's just a free destroy all enchantments for Commander, basically. That mm-hmm. seems like a very reasonable card, but Sky Shroud Cutter, I mean, there's no Beast Tribal in the block, so maybe it would make sense if you could cast it for free and there were lots of beasts. By the way, this one should really be a Kavu. It has that weird predator face, like a bunch of the Kavu.
Yeah, this was before the Kavu, though, so they knew Kavu were coming. But it didn't make sense for the flavor of the plane. So I opened a lot of these as a kid and I never wanted to play it. And even as an adult that understands like 5 life for your opponent's not the end of the world, it's still not worth it for a 2/2.
Yeah. And if you're not paying the life, it's a 4 mana 2/2. So I guess if you want to play this card, you want to find a way to punish your opponent for gaining life. The first thing I thought of was a Kavu Predator, which was from Planar Chaos, I think. And that was 1 and a green for a 2/2 with trample that said, whenever an opponent gains life, you put that many +1/+1 counters on it. So that's kind of a nice little, it's not even really a curve. You could just play the Kavu Predator and then immediately be like, it's a 7/7 now on turn 2.
Yeah, but if you don't draw Kavu Predator, you have Sky Shroud Cutter in your hand.
That's true.
I mean,
like, I'm not saying this is going to take over the legacy cues. I'm just saying, I'm trying to make the card work, man. So other than Kavu Predator, I know of False Cure, which is a rare from Onslaught. It's black for an instant that says, until the end of turn, whatever player gains life, that player loses 2 life for each life they gained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would lose 5 life. So it's a lava axe.
Yeah.
For black, and it's Cry Shard Cutter.
Yeah, it seems not great. And then there's Punishing Fire, which is an uncommon from Zendikar. It's 1 red for an instant that deals 2 damage to a creature or player. And then when an opponent gains life, you can pay a red to return that from your graveyard to your hand. But you would never want to play that card in a deck where you're letting them gain 5 life. It's just like a shock. I guess what I'm wondering is, do we like this mechanic where you can get something for free or for cheaper if you let your opponent gain life? And alternately, do we like the kind of Kavu Predator False Cure Punishing Fire thing where it punishes your opponent for gaining life? It doesn't just say your opponents can't gain life, but it actually does something negative when they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I don't know. I always say it's easier just to kill a person. Wow, this is coming off really bloody. It's easier to kill a person in Magic than trying to prevent them from doing fair stuff. And life gain is like the fairest thing you can possibly do. The only thing I've even seen something close to broken with it is Aetherflux Reservoir, which is really a Storm card, and Aloro. Yep. But like that whole deck is a life gain deck that does stuff, and you still kill people. Like you have to have them really like triple or quadruple their life total before you have to start worrying about killing the Aloro player. I feel like it's a trap.
Okay. I could just see instances, especially... I've been playing a lot of Standard and Arena. There's a lot of life gain decks in Standard and Explorer. And so I can see a situation where something that punishes that, especially at instant speed, could be interesting. I would worry about more cards that were maybe free if you paid some amount of life, just because that cost isn't that big. And anytime, as we know from the last 5 years of Magic, when you're playing with free spells, you're in the danger zone.
Right.
So... this one, no chance of being particularly busted.
No. I would play this card if you had your opponent gain 3 life. And it's also just a 2-2. Okay. So I'm glad they didn't keep going down the path of creatures with you can cast for free by having your opponent gain life. Because so I don't know
what
you're
saying. You're not digging these out of the bulk box anytime
soon. Oh, God, no. Reverent Silence, though, I absolutely should play. Because having your opponents gain 6 life in a multiplayer game, who cares? That effect's too good.
I kind of like it. Well, today we're going to talk about Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate, which, if that sounds like a mouthful, it is. It's not only the longest set name in Magic, it's the longest product name, period, coming in at 43 characters. That's one more than Dual Decks Mirrodin Pure versus New Phyrexia.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Wizards of the Coast fantasy product. Longer the better, right?
Yeah, we've had a lot of these. It's a global series, Dual Decks and Dual Deck Anthology and... but Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate. All right, we got there. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on here. I don't know what all your familiarity is. I know that I'm a little more engaged in the D&D world by virtue of my weekly game, but Baldur's Gate is a legendary city in the Forgotten Realms on the continent of Faerun. It's known for being the setting of 2 great PC games, and there's a third one on the way that has been in... a kind of early access program and will be apparently until next year. I don't want to go deep on the lore, but just know that there are 1 million wikis that can set you straight, and I will probably link to some of those in the show notes.
And I cannot underline enough, Baldur's Gate 2 is probably one of the best computer RPGs of all time, or it's right up there, and it's a 22-year-old game. It is worth, there's like cheap copies you can get online. It is worth playing. It is absolutely fantastic game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they remastered it too, which I would definitely be interested in. I actually, when digging through some boxes at my parents' house recently, found my copy of Baldur's Gate 2 with like the original rule books and everything, which is just super cool to look through.
That is super cool. So this is our second foray into a Dungeons & Dragons set. Like last summer, we had the core set replacement, Be Adventures of the Forgotten Realms. And now we're getting essentially a year later, another version of it with Commander Legends, right? Like, so this is the sequel to Commander Legends, and it's technically a sequel to the core set that came out last year. So what do we see in this that's different from those two sets?
Yeah, so like Commander Legends, it's a multiplayer draft set designed to be drafted in groups and then played in 4-player games. Very much like the Dungeons & Dragons Adventures from the Forgotten Realms set, it has these classic D&D tropes. A lot of the spells are the names of spells. And most importantly, it has dungeons. In this case, it has one particular dungeon called the Undercity. And there's a new mechanic here called initiative. It's sort of like Monarch, which you may remember from our conspiracy sets. A card has to introduce the initiative into the game. And so instead of like Monarch, where you draw extra cards at the end of every turn, when you take the initiative, and then at the beginning of your upkeep, you get to venture into the Undercity, which is a dungeon that is introduced in this expansion. Now, this doesn't play too well with other dungeons, but the way it works is, if you're already in a dungeon, say you're building a D&D cube and you have the other dungeons in it, then when you take the initiative or during your upkeep, you venture one more room into that dungeon.
Right.
But the only way to get into the Undercity is specifically to take the initiative. If you play a card that says venture into the dungeon, you cannot just choose the Undercity.
Which is very flavorful, right? You have to go into the Undercity. You just can't like dungeon crawl into it.
I think this is one of the things that we were worried about when we talked about AFR and we knew there was going to be a commander set coming out, is are they going to add dungeons? Because there's already quite a level of decision paralysis when you go into a dungeon, and are they going to continue expanding that? So this is kind of an interesting way to do it. Maybe a little confusing, but yeah, it seems pretty good. So it's a new dungeon. It has a total of 5 steps, and there are a couple of different rooms that range everything from, you know, scrying to making a treasure token to goading a creature. I might as well just read the last room on this, because that's the one that everyone gets excited about in all these dungeons. It's Throne of the Dead 3. And when you get there, you get to reveal the top 10 cards of your library, put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield with 3+1/+1 counters on it, and it gains hexproof till your next turn, then shuffle. So that seems like very powerful.
That is very powerful. I mean, like any of these longer dungeons, it's a bit of work to get through. But like, yeah, the payoff's better than some of the other ones. Like I always would go through Lost Mine of Phandelver because it was only 4 steps, but there was nothing negative and they're all minor effects. And this is the same thing. There's all these minor effects on it and the payoff is pretty good.
They're valuable. I agree. I was Phandelvin like crazy during that format. And it should be interesting to see. It will be fascinating to see how much faster you get through, knowing that if you have the initiative, you just do it during your upkeep.
Right. And that actually is nice too, because one of my complaints with the original venture mechanic is it's very parasitic. So if you were not venturing, you could venture once or twice, but didn't do a whole lot. At least with the initiative, if you still have it, you get to keep going through the Undercity, which is nice.
As we mentioned, this is a multiplayer draft set. And like the first Commander Legends set, it is a commander-focused set. So instead of commanders with partner, so you can choose to, there's a new mechanic in this set called a background, where some of the legendary creatures in the set say choose a background. And there are enchantments that are also legendary and have a type background, which if you have a commander that says choose your background as your commander, you can also have in your command zone. So it's a way to have more than one color, but you instead of having 2 commanders, you just have this enchantment.
It's a great fix. I'm glad they finally figured it out, because it turns out having 2 separate legendary creatures is probably too good, or it's very underwhelming. You know, thinking about all the different Commander Legends. I wasn't prepared to do like 2 random uncommon legendary creatures, but this is nice. Like it adds flavor, but also, you know, it balances out. You still have your 1 commander and you get some cool static ability with it and you can recast those. You know, what's not to like?
There are 30 backgrounds in the set. They range in rarity from common to mythic, and they are all single colored except for, I guess this is where we should probably talk about the card Faceless One.
That's a weird one. So yeah, Faceless One is like the Prismatic Piper of this set. So Prismatic Piper was in Commander Legends and it was really designed when you're drafting that you weren't forced to pick a partner that may have been suboptimal, just to have the colors. Like it left you open to choose a color that best fit for your draft deck. And Faceless One does the same thing here, right? Like if you can't find a commander to make it work, you can draft Faceless One, make it work for one of your colors as your main legendary creature, and then you can choose the background to go with it.
Yeah, and the difference with Faceless One is Faceless One is also a background. And so it works in both directions. If you have a commander that can choose a background, Faceless One can be your background. So then it's just a 3/3 legendary enchantment creature background with no real abilities other than you can choose its color. So they kind of got to a way to make sure, yes, you will not be stuck with one color if you do things correctly.
Right. And it's a common. Easy to pick up. You're not stuck. And that might not have the best deck, but at least you have something.
I guess you could probably have Faceless One as your commander and Faceless One as your background.
I think there's a Reddit thread where you can, there's a loophole, essentially, so you could have a three-color commander deck, if I remember correctly, where you can have three Faceless Ones, and your first Faceless One chooses your first Faceless One as a background, but then you can cast, I don't know. There was some loophole where you can have like a multi-color deck, but it seemed convoluted and dumb.
Well, there's a third returning mechanic that you, I know, have a special interest in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Gates?
Yeah, so Gates is a land type on non-basic lands. We previously saw this in Return to Ravnica. The cycle of common dual lands is fixing, matched with all the different guilds. So you had Dimir Guildgate, Boros Guildgate, etc., and all these guildgates produced the two colors of the guild. Thing is, outside of printing two more in the third time we went to Ravnica, there aren't a lot of gates. But now we have 9 new gates that are coming. So now there's 20 possible gates in all of Magic the Gathering, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I am most excited about the common cycle that are the same as the Thriving Lands from Jumpstart. I'll read one as an example. Black Dragon Gate. It's a land. It's a gate. It enters the battlefield tapped. As it enters the battlefield, you choose a color other than black, and it taps for black or a mana of the chosen color. So that's basically the same as Thriving Moor. It's just also a gate. And this specifically excites me as the owner of a foiled out Pauper Cube, because the Thriving Lands were not available in foil and these are. So hallelujah. I'm probably putting them both in. I love these as mana fixing in basically anything.
Yeah. Cube. And this, I love the Thriving Lands in general, because it was a great way to add fixing at common and not be, you know, gated into a certain color combination. Right. It allowed you to be open and play these in any deck you wanted. I am a Mace's End stan, as the kids say these days. So I'm excited that there's now 20 gates that I can work with to win with Mace's End. Double the amount, and now I don't get stressed out when someone exiles one of my gates and I can't win the game. Larger margin of error to win the game with a very cool card, in my opinion, that no one else thinks is cool, but I do. So that's all that matters.
Something very much worth mentioning that's coming back in this set is the adventure mechanic from Throne of Eldraine. This plagued Standard, as well as other formats, but it's these creatures that have an additional option on them where you're able to cast the instant or sorcery spell that is an adventure. Then the creature is exiled. It goes on an adventure, and then eventually you can cast the creature from exile. But it's just an amazing idea to put these in a D&D set because it's very flavorful. It fits like the party is going off and doing a thing, as well as in a multiplayer format, it gives you multiple things to do with one card.
So I'm just glad this isn't in Standard. I bet you, I would bet you a dollar they tried to put these in the Adventures of Forgotten Realms set, realized they're still busted for Standard, and just took them out. This terrifies me. Like, adventures, I think, are a hard mechanic to do properly. And the fact that this just jumps straight to Legacy, great. I'm okay with that. Do as many broken things as you want. This will hardly come up.
Yeah, seems good. I should read an adventure card just as an example. I'll do a common. We'll see this one a lot. Young Red Dragon. It's 3 and a red for a 3/2 creature dragon with flying. And it says Young Red Dragon can't block. But it has an adventure on it that is an instant for 1 and a red. You can create a treasure token. Yeah. And so that's obviously very overcosted for creating a treasure token, but it's just something you can do before you are ready or able to cast the Young Red Dragon.
Yeah. And that's the type of thing where, like, they don't have to worry about balancing it. Because, like, how would this work in a Standard set? Don't ask me. Because that probably should cost 3 and not set 2. But you know what? They don't have to worry about it. One of the cool things, this is not a mechanic for this set, but I do think I want to talk about it real quick with the set overview. We talked about how this is set in Faerun in Baldur's Gate, which is a legendary city in it. They have characters that are in the setting that we see in the video games, but also in adventure modules for Baldur's Gate. So like one example, you have Imowen, Traveling Mage, if I remember correctly, is that her title in this one? But she was a character you could play with in the Baldur's Gate series. So they have a lot of cool callbacks. We have Minx Kimbu as a planeswalker. It's just nice little call-outs of the different legendary creatures that populate this setting.
Yeah, and anybody who's read any of the novels related to the Forgotten Realms stuff will recognize a lot of these characters. So a very cool thing for people who are into that world. And apparently Wizards was very happy with the way that Adventures in the Forgotten Realms sold to D&D people. There were, I know, a lot of D&D people who came into my LGS and were interested in buying some magic cards, and I have no doubt that it will be very similar here.
So last thing, what's weird about this set is technically a commander set, so these are only legal in legacy tournaments or older. So we're going to talk about some cool cards, but these cards aren't going to be introduced in Modern or Pioneer or anything. People forget that sometimes. A lot of these cool cards really are meant for the EDH table.
Yep. Same legality as most of the standard commander decks that we see.
They get released at the same time as standard sets. That must mean they're standard legal.
Yeah, that's very confusing for literally all people. So I'm sure this will be no different. Wait, why can I play these? And given that they're going to do some alchemy battle for Baldur's Gate on Arena, people are going to be confused by that, and alchemy's a whole thing. All right, moving on, let's talk about, as we always do, signature reprints. I'll start with the first one, Kindred Discovery. This was originally in Commander 2017, 3BB for an enchantment. It's as it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type, and when a creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield or attacks, you draw a card. So this card was very expensive. It's going to be a lot cheaper now that it has been reprinted here, previously only in a commander set and on the list, but really, really powerful in any kind of tribal deck.
Yeah. Pick a tribe, draw some cards. It's pretty sweet. The next one we have, this is actually a surprising reprint. It's a Deadly Dispute. So this came out last year. We talked about it a lot when this came out in Adventures of Forgotten Realms. One in a black for an instant. As an additional cost to cast the spell, sacrifice an artifact or creature, and you draw two cards and create a treasure token. Well, it turns out this is a very good card in general. It's just a really good version of this effect. And it was a $5 common at one point. You know, it was really hard to get copies of this card. It was only printed in Adventures of Forgotten Realms. It was one of the first sets that people could play coming back from COVID. So it wasn't as opened as it normally would be. And yeah, I remember trying to buy a copy of this and I blanched at how expensive it was. And now they've put a second printing and it's, you know, slightly cheap. It's a lot cheaper now.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot last time because it obsoleted Costly Plunder, made that card irrelevant, just a strictly better version. And so, yeah. Really nice to just have more copies of it. Still very playable and standard at the moment. All right, our next one. You know, they're going to give us some classics. And they gave us both Fireball and Lightning Bolt. It's just great to see these. I'll read Fireball. Originally printed in Alpha, it's X and a red for a sorcery. The spell costs one more to cast for each target beyond the first, and it deals X damage divided evenly, rounded down among any number of targets. Or put another way, and I just have to read this because I read the Beatdown box set version every single time that I talk about Fireball. You could say that it costs XY red and Fireball deals X damage divided evenly rounded down among Y plus one target creatures and or players. And then, of course, Lightning Bolt, red for an instant, deals three damage to anything.
These are classics. I prefer the old art, but I'm glad that there is a D&D alt art rulebook art for this. That is pretty cool.
They had to do it. They had to give us Fireball and Lightning Bolt. These are fundamental third level D&D spells. We needed them in the set.
And clearly,
Lightning Bolt in common, which bold move. Bold I know move. It's a multiplayer set, but still pretty bold.
I mean, they had it in common for the core sets when it was reprinted way back.
Yeah, but we can all agree that was kind of bonkers.
Oh, it was a huge mistake. Last thing I'll say about it, Richard Garfield clearly cribbed some cards from D&D in Alpha, and it's nice to see that kind of callback. The next one is a weird one, but it kind of needed a reprint. So it is Bramble Sovereign. Bramble Sovereign is 2GG for a 4/4 dryad. When another non-token creature enters the battlefield, you may pay one and a green. If you do, that creature's controller creates a token that's a copy of that creature. This was in...
Sick.
Yeah, it was written originally in Battle Bond, and it was like a $25 card, and now it's cheap.
Yeah, super powerful, already 4-mana, 4/4, great ability, recommended. All right, our next reprint is a nice one, Blade of Selves. Originally printed in Commander 2015, 2-mana for an artifact equipment. with equip 4, an equipped creature has Myriad. So Myriad is something we see a bunch in the new set. It says, whenever the creature attacks, for each opponent other than the defending player, you can create a token that's a copy of that creature, tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker they control. And then you exile those tokens at the end of combat. So anything with an Enter the Battlefield effect is very cool with Blade of Cells. Anytime you're attacking with a big creature, really nice to equip. And a reprint here is going to bring the price way down, which is nice for Commander players.
Yeah, I mean, this has been insanely expensive for a long time, and it's a cool card. Good job, Watsy. Yeah.
And, job. You know, you can live the dream of putting this on a creature that already has Myriad and just going way off.
Super off. Like, off the record? I don't know. You know what? Let's just move on. The next one is also another cool reprint. They're all cool reprints. I don't know why I'm saying that. It's Nature's Lore. Nature's Lore was originally printed in Ice Age. We're talking super old. It's real simple. It's one in a green for a sorcery. You search your library for a forest card, put the card in the battlefield, then shuffle. So the reason why this is expensive for a common is it doesn't say basic forest. So you could find a triome with it. You could find a dual land with it. Pick your poison, but it's a lot better than you think it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And as the original Ice Age version will tell you, this does not count towards your one land per turn limit. So
that's true.
That's what we call ramp in the biz.
So it's interesting because this card was printed into the ground when it first came out. It got printed in 5th edition with great art from Alan Rabinowitz. Therese Nielsen had a version in one of the portals. It got printed, you know, in all the starter sets, and then Wizards dropped it like it's hot. And it didn't see another printing.
It had a dual deck and then a mystery booster, but you know what? We're back. We're back.
Yeah.
Okay. Next are the Battle Bond lands. This is a cycle of 5 lands that enter the battlefield tapped, unless you have 2 or more opponents, and tap for 2 colors of mana. These are the allied colored versions. These got really expensive after Battle Bond, so makes sense to reprint them here. The enemy colored ones were in the previous Commander Legends set, so this was pretty expected, but get these while they are cheap. They're very good for Commander, especially if you are in a 2 or more color deck.
Yep, and these were lands that people were clamoring. Like, every time they released a new Commander set, people on a certain social media site got a little hurt, being like, where's the Battle Bond lands? Well, now they're here, so
enjoy.
Lastly, Reflecting Pool is a cool reprint that's coming out. Reflecting Pool, it's a land. Tap, add 1 mana of any type that a land you control could produce. You control land that makes Jund. This also makes Jund. Control land that makes 5 colors. This makes 5 colors. That's it.
Pretty simple. Very cool. Yeah. Needed a reprint, got very expensive. There are 48 other reprints that we won't talk about here. We're going to move on to Forced Obsolescence, which is the part of the show where we, just kidding, not this time. Nice try, Wizards, trying to make us do another Forced Obsolescence, where we talk about what cards are now obsolete, and it's really hard to do, and it takes a long time to prepare. Not this set, that's only for regular expansions, boy.
Yes. Also, literally, there's so much text on these cards, I don't know if they obsolete anything.
Not worth our time. Yep. We're going to move straight on to creature types. There are 2 new creature types. First is Gif. This is a D&D race that has been brought to Magic, kind of like Tieflings from AFR, who are also back in this set. A lot of lore around Gif. Used to be one race, split into 2 races. Nobody really knows where they come from, but they know that they're now the Gif Yankee and the Gif Zerai. And then here, we know that there's a Gif Zerai Monk, because that's one of the cards. The other one, Lazel Vleketh's Champion. That pronunciation is definitely wrong, but we don't have a pronunciation guide. Wizards of the Coast, give us a pronunciation guide. Not sure which one that is, but hey, Gif, they're here. And then the second one, this is a good one, is Walrus. We've got a bronze Walrus. It's an artifact. It's a 2/2. When it enters, you scry 2, and it taps to add a mana of any color. Why does a Walrus tap for mana of any color? Probably because it's a 3 mana artifact, and a lot of 3 mana artifacts do that. But this is the first one, and as far as I can tell, the first Walrus ever depicted in any way on a card.
That's insane. We could have had Paul McCartney in Magic for longer, but we didn't. What the hell, Wizards?
Goo goo gajoob, my friend. Goo goo gajoob.
I'm just going to run down some really cool notable type combinations. Either these are unique, or we haven't seen these in a while, or we just like to see a lot of words on the type line. I'm going to start with Elephant Angel. That is the creature type for Lulu, Loyal Hollyphant. Cool.
Love that. We've got a cat ranger. That's Tabaxi Toucaneers.
We have our second orc cleric, White Plume Adventurer. And this one was an eroded. So orcish healer, stuff it. You're just a cleric.
We have a dragon rogue and a dragon rogue warrior.
You just got shown up in your first set. How do you feel to be dragonborn looter? You're not even a good looter. Next, we have a human rogue wizard. Literally, this person couldn't pick a class. Well, it's really Emoin, Mystic Trickster. And yeah, she couldn't pick a class in Baldur's Gate either. So
yeah, it's called multi-classing, Christian. Get with the times.
Pick a class. Stick with it.
Wow. We have our first ever bird artificer. A lot of bird wizards, a lot of bird advisors, but our first bird artificer. And it's a Kenku for you D&D fans.
Don't even know what that is, but I assume that's cool. We have our first dragon turtle. What? Crazy. It's Sailor's Bane. But really, why haven't we had a dragon turtle yet?
No, we have had a dragon turtle.
What?
Yeah, from AFR. It's a card called Dragon Turtle, and its types are dragon and turtle.
Seriously? Did I miss that?
The look on your face. The look on your face is so good. I wish the listeners could see that.
Son of a...
The types are cool. No, you're definitely right. You know what? We're leaving this in. This is great. All right. We have a hag. Sea hag, actually. There's our first hag since Born of the Gods. We've gone more in the witch direction, which is our warlocks, but not a lot of hags. You know, there were some in the dark, and then not since, like, the Lorwyn Shadowmoor block.
You'd think, like, they'd have more hags, but apparently Wizards is just very sensitive about saying something's a hag. So, you know. By the way, Scarwood Hag, the ugliest hag in Magic. I'm sorry, Scarwood Hag. It's pretty bad.
Just an atrocious hag.
Next one, we have a fairy elf wizard. Pick a lane. This is on Winter Eladrin.
We have our second beholder skeleton. Beholders don't have classes. They're just beholders. But we do have two beholders that are also skeletons. So how do you make a creature with a bunch of eye stalks that can cast a bunch of spells scarier? You make it undead.
Don't want to play that again in a D&D campaign. I think I will skip that fight and be a coward. We have a tiefling rogue assassin, just highlighting the cool multi-classes, I guess. But really, aren't all assassins rogues? What's up with that?
The assassin is actually a rogue subclass.
I knew you were going to say that. Why isn't just tiefling assassin then?
You know, because then it's also a rogue.
Yeah, but it's already a rogue.
Yeah, but if it just said tiefling assassin, then it wouldn't. See, it doesn't. It needs to work with the magic rules.
Man,
that's how it works.
D&D seems dumb.
All right, fine. All right, next is our first ever fungus warrior, Moldfolk. That's fun to say. I like it.
Moldfolk, yeah. Next we have a snake cleric warlock. That's actually just badass. That is on Sivris, Nightmare Speaker. This is a legendary creature. Don't mess with it. That's all you need to know.
We have our first ever giant bard. No, it's not just a bard that is large, although it also is that. It's actually a firbolg, so D&D people might know that that's a kind of giant. So yeah. There you go.
We have a snake dragon, first ever snake dragon. Dragons have been a lot of things, but not snakes, too.
Yeah, the rare non-flying dragon. It's green, so you know sometimes it doesn't get to fly.
Is a Linnorm just a snake dragon? Is this just a fancy way of saying snake dragon?
Eh, probably.
Okay.
We have our first ever spider beast. It's an Ettercap, classic D&D creature.
I'm just surprised we haven't had a spider beast before this. I was actually genuinely shocked. We've had bird bears before, basically last year, the printing of the first AFR set, but we now have an owlbear cub. Last year we had an owlbear, and now we have the owlbear child. So hope we get the owlbear family completed in the next AFR set.
What I've learned from this are owlbears are terrifying, because an owlbear is a 4-4, and a cub is already just a 3-3.
Oh, yeah. And what's crazy is this is actually an appropriate version of the flavor words. Mama's coming. Yeah. Yeah. Mama's coming.
We have our first ever goblin druid. And by the way, it's green because it's an owlbear shepherd. It's not itself an owlbear, but it's shepherding the owlbears.
So fun fact, I thought this was the first green goblin. I was completely wrong. Besides the fact that it's in Spider-Man, there's been a lot of mono green goblins throughout Magic's history. Next, we got Vampire Elf Rogue. Asterion the Decadent was an elf turned into a vampire, and I guess is a rogue too. I don't get D&D. I need to work on that, but he's cool.
Yeah. We have a human boar. That's right. A human boar. Every part of that is and should be horrifying to you. Also, his name is Raga Draga Gorguts Boss, and that is just a blast to say. The opposite of a tongue twister. It's just purely pleasant.
Again, I think when this came out, I cut the type line and I sent it to you, and I said, this is the most terrifying type line I've ever seen in a Magic card.
All right, let's talk about some tokens. The first one is a 4/1 black skeleton with menace. And I love when they do this. It's made by two different cards, both Altar of Ball, or rather Bone Offering, which was the adventure that is on Altar of Ball, and then Gut True Soul Zealot that lets you sacrifice creatures or artifacts to make some tact at attacking 4/1 menace skeletons.
One thing we forgot to mention in our mechanic thing, they're now adventures on non-creature spells. Throne of Eldraine only had creatures. Now we get to see on artifacts. That's pretty cool.
Some artifacts, there's equipment, there's a couple of different options.
Next, we have a cute token. You got to have a cute token in every set. If you don't, Wizards fires you. We have, it's a 1/1 rabbit, super adorable. It Kadira, Caller of the Small, makes this token. 1 green-white for a legendary orc ranger. It's a 3/3 and has trample. And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, for each token you control, create a 1/1 white rabbit creature token.
Adorable.
Yeah.
We have a 4/4 green ox that comes from a white card, Contraband Livestock. I recently tweeted at Memory Jar MTG. We had talked previously about creature tokens that do not match the color identity of the card that makes them. And so I made a spreadsheet of every single one in the history of Magic that did that. And this will be added to the list.
I forgot about this spreadsheet. You should have sent this to me so I could have helped.
It was, you know, it was a labor of love, and I wanted to stay up super late that night for some reason.
Okay, I feel bad. But for the record, why 4/4? I don't know. It's just cool. Next, we have demons, specifically a 3/3 demon. This is a first. Tasha, the Witch Queen, which is one of the planeswalkers in the set, makes this token specifically when you cast a spell you don't own. How do you do that? Well, she has some ways to do it. You can also, there's some other cards in Magic that let you do that.
I think a lot of people are going to assume this demon is flying because demon tokens traditionally do have flying, and it is not.
Nope.
It's up.
It's a ground pounder.
We don't really talk about the associated commander sets when we do these shows, but I did want to mention some of the tokens from the commander set just because there's a unique. We have a 1/1 black horror that comes from Zelix Sanity Flayer. Whenever a player mills one or more creature cards, you get to create these black horrors, and I'm very excited about this card for my Phoenix mill deck, so get in there, please. Mm.
We also have a 3/2 shapeshifter that comes from Black Market Connections. I don't know why it's a 3/2, because they've had 2/2 shapeshifter tokens, but cool. We got a slightly stronger shapeshifter from this.
And then I just want to note, there's a 1/1 sapperling in the set. There are 1/1 sapperlings in a lot of sets. But this one is particularly spooky because it's like a humanoid sapperling, not just like a cute little mushroom bug thing. And I hate it. And yeah, I'll be acquiring a bunch of them.
Terrifying. Legitimately, this looks like, what was that zombie game on the PS3 that was really good?
You got me.
It had the father and the daughter.
I've always been an Xbox guy. So
Last of Us.
There you go. I knew it was out there.
Welcome to our Boomer podcast.
Gen X, please. Come on. You're a millennial. What are we doing here? We're Magic Boomers for sure, though. Flavor words are back in this set. We liked these a lot, as I recall, in Adventures from the Forgotten Realms. So I mentioned earlier the Bird Artificer, Kenku Artificer. I'll just read this card. It's 2 and a blue for a 1/1. And it says, Homunculus Servant. When Kenku Artificer enters the battlefield, put 3+1/+1 counters on up to one target non-creature artifact. That artifact becomes a 0/0 Homunculus artifact creature with fly. Do the words Homunculus Servant change the effect of the card? No. But you know what? It's the name of a spell, so we're going to put it on the card. Love the flavor of these. Just a nice little touch.
Yeah.
Let's do our counter roundup. The first one of these is Alundo the Seer. This is 2 green-blue for a 3/5 legendary human shaman. It says, tap, draw a card, then exile a card from your hand and put a number of time counters on it equal to its mana value. It gains when the last time counter is removed from this card. If it's exiled, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. If you cast a creature spell this way, it gains haste until end of turn. Then remove a time counter from each other card you own in exile. So time counters, we know from suspend cards. And this is kind of a suspend lord. It makes your other cards come off suspend faster. Very cool.
But it's not suspend. It's a little frustrating.
It's not suspend. They don't say suspend. If this was a Modern Horizon set, it would say the card gets suspend, but you know, we're keeping it real, keeping it easy.
I'm so mad it doesn't say suspend. The next one I'm surprised we haven't had before. It's Descent counters, specifically on Descent into Avernus. So Descent to Avernus is Toon Red for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, put two Descent counters on Descent into Avernus. Then each player creates X treasure tokens, and Descent into Avernus deals X damage to each player, works as a number of Descent counters on Descent into Avernus. So everyone gets richer, but at the same time gets hurt. Seems like a good group hug card.
I will note that Descent into Avernus is a D&D module you can get in hardcover book form, similar to, say, Lost Mine of Phandelver or Tomb of Annihilation, which were dungeons in the AFR set.
I did not know that about Descent to Avernus. That's really cool.
The next one is Fraying Line. This is an artifact. It is the first that has rope counters.
Next, we have experience counters, which they're not new. It's kind of weird to see not in a commander set. Well, in a commander pre-con product. This is on Minthara, Merciless Soul. I'm just going to read this real quick. It's actually a cool card. It is 2 white-black for a 2/2 legendary elf cleric. It has Ward X, where Ward X is the number of experience counters you have. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, you get an experience counter, and creatures you control get +1/+0 for each experience counter you have.
I think this card probably just goes in Daxos the Return decks. White-black card that cares about experience counters and makes enchantment creatures equal to the number of experience counters you have. It's interesting to see them play in this space because experience counters can be pretty overpowered, especially as they are on a player and can be hard to remove. But yeah, I have no complaints at this point.
I will say Daxos is the most fair, quote unquote, of all the different experience counter commanders that they released. And so it's fine that they put another one that works with it, you know?
Yeah. Next is Noble's Purse with coin counters. Noble's Purse is a 2-mana artifact that enters the battlefield tapped, and with 3 coin counters on it, you can tap it and remove one to create a treasure token, so a very slow treasure maker. Coin counters were previously only on Athreos Shroud Veiled, the Theros Beyond Death Biobox promo, I believe?
Yes. If this wasn't a D&D set, this would be a charge counter. Absolutely, yes. Would be. But yep. Got to work the flavor, and it works well. Next, we have Ravenloft Adventurer, and it has hit counters. Yeah, so we've had 2 other creatures printed in the last few years that have hit counters. We have Etrada the Silencer, which put hit counters on creatures when it dealt combat damage to a player. And we also had Mary the Killing Quill, which was a legendary creature in the Streets of New Capenna Commander set, and it gave a hit counter to creatures when they died and exiled it with it. So now, you know, there seems to be a theme where black ish cards get hit counters.
Yeah, it seems like you could make an Etrada commander deck of some kind that had other cards that put hit counters on creatures in exile. So maybe you just get in once with Etrada and then you kill an opponent. I don't want to do it, but somebody does. Finally, you already mentioned Tasha the Witch Queen with that 3/3 black demon creature token, but she also has page counters. Her +1 is draw a card for each opponent, exile up to 1 target instant or sorcery spell from the player's graveyard and put a page counter on it. The -3 is you may cast a spell from among cards in exile with page counters on them without paying its mana cost. So we've had 263 total planeswalkers in Magic. She is only the 7th one to place counters that aren't either +1/+1 counters or loyalty counters. We've seen more of this lately because some of the planeswalkers will put ability counters on creatures. There was a Kaya that put ghost form counters on a creature. Karn, we talked about with John Carson last week, that put silver counters on cards in exile, but that's pretty rare.
Shout out to Morgan Wentworth. She now has yet another book card she has to include in her book EDH set. And funny enough, all the cards with page counters have books. Makes sense. There's a book in Tasha the Witch Queen's art, so books. Pretty cool.
Yeah, there were previously 3 artifacts and 1 creature aura that also had page counters on them. Let's talk a little bit about the special frames, etc. in the set. We, I think, have come to a consensus that borderless alt-art planeswalkers and Assorted Mythics are always good. The standard extended borders are always good. We now have the showcase rulebook cards being back. Don't really do it for me, Christian. How do you feel about them?
There are alternate art cards.
Okay. We also have foil-etched legends and backgrounds. These are like the foil-etched legends that you could get in Commander Legends. How do you feel about those?
All I'm going to say for all this is I'm kind of getting fatigued with all these different alt art versions of cards. I get why they exist. I get why they do them. But at this point, it's kind of hard to figure out cards that you will not have seen a whole lot anyway in paper due to the pandemic still going on. But also on top of that, like, cards you're not going to play a whole lot against anyway. So whatever, like, they make cards cheaper and that's fine. But I'm just kind of tired of it.
The thing I will say about the foil etched legends and backgrounds is they are dark borders and white text, like some of the promos, which I do like. And if they are the same process, which I read they are, as the original Commander Legends, these foils don't bend. So whether or not you like the etching, they are not pringly. They are totally flat. And that is great.
That is great. I mean, for being honest, I get that they had to do the rulebook cards. Maybe they just like stick with doing foil etch stuff from now on because those are great foils. I don't know. Just again, kind of fatigued.
This brings us to our secret reach card. Recent sets have featured creatures that for some reason nobody notices have reach and attack their flyers right into. I'm not talking about myself, of course. I would never do such a thing. Recent examples include Wrecking Crew from Streets of New Capenna and then the back of Besager Reaches Skyward from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. In this set, I'm just going to say I think there's only one choice, and that's Wilson Refined Grizzly. He's one and a green for a 2/2 legendary bear warrior that can't be countered, has vigilance, reach, trample, and ward too, unless you choose a background. There are so many keywords on this card. First of all, I love everything about it. But yes, there are so many keywords that I'm going to forget it has reach and just like ping in with some 1/1 flyer that dies immediately.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I don't know how it has reach flavorfully. Makes zero sense. Even if I knew the D&D background, I probably wouldn't get it. But I don't care. Wilson's awesome.
He's the only choice. He's in the art smelling a potion. Maybe he can throw the potions into the air. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Tongue Twisters. Inspired by our favorite magic tongue twister, Click Slither Quick Sliver. Thanks to David Lightford Smith for that. I did go through, as I always do, say every card name in the set 3 times fast to come up with the best tongue twister. Christian, I know you think you have a front runner.
Yeah, I can't even pronounce it slowly. Elminster's?
Elminster.
Elminster's. Elminster's Simulacrum. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's that one. I've read all these. They're all bad. Elminster's Simulacrum is the worst.
For me, it's Sword Coast Serpent, which doesn't sound that hard, but if I try Sword Coast Serpent, 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 no. That just becomes gibberish very quickly, and it seems like something that would be easy. Extra shout out to Lulu Loyal Hollyphant.
Jesus Christ, no.
Which is its own nightmare.
No, nope, 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 nope. You're not making me say that word. Nope, 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 nope.
All right. On to our suggestions from our listener, Camilla. We do this every set. She said, it might be fun to hear something like a common, an uncommon, and a rare that you think are well-designed, exemplify the set, or just excite you one way or another. Christian, do you have a common that you're excited about?
Oh, yeah. There's only one choice. That's Lightning Bolt. Welcome back, old friend.
I'm going a little different tech. I'm going with Scaled Nurturer. This is one and a green for a 0/2 Dragon Druid. It has tap, add a green mana. When you spend this mana to cast a dragon creature spell, you gain 2 life. And this is just, I love that we are using the Dragonborn race as an opportunity to make cards with creature type dragon at lower mana values. This one is cheap, and it helps you cast your larger dragons, and it maybe gets you back into a game that you're out of because you've been waiting to get to 5 and 6 mana and cast these dragons. It's just a dragon tribal card, and it's a dragon itself. I feel like this is Magic as Richard Garfield and presumably Gary Gygax, who's credited with creating D&D, intended.
I'm actually just surprised they haven't ported Dragonborn into Magic somehow, because they always try to do Dragon Tribal with these weird support cards like Goblin Shamans or whatever, and it just feels weird. And I'm glad that they're just, you know, they had a chance to properly support dragons.
There's also a 2-mana 2/2 in red that you can sacrifice for 2 red mana. Kind of the same thing, help ramp out your dragons. Just a very cool way to still do the big dumb dragon deck with a little creature.
What's your uncommon?
This was kind of an easy choice for me, and I figured this is a card you would like so much that when I picked it, I went into the show notes specifically because I'm like, I bet he picked this one. Fortunately, he didn't. This is Cut a Deal. It's 2 and a white for a sorcery, and it says each opponent draws a card, then you draw a card for each opponent who drew a card this way. And I love the flavor text from Duke Thalamra Venthampur. It's a win-win arrangement. I just happen to win the most.
Who doesn't want to win the most? And this is winning the most at a grand scale. It's fantastic.
This is just a cute little multiplayer card. It's a little bit of group hug for the gamers. I personally don't know how to play group hug decks. I'm just trying to like stomp face at all times. But this really speaks to me. You're in a four-player game. Everybody gets to draw a card. You just draw three cards. Nobody can be mad at that.
No, don't be mad.
Whereas I play Ancestral Recall and everybody's like, that's banned. Where'd you even get that?
What the hell, man? This is cute. It's great. I need to get a copy. I kind of forgot about it. I'm going to go with Cloud Kill only because of the uncommons I've seen besides the backgrounds. This seems like one of the cooler cards I can port over to actual Commander. Yeah, it's an expensive board wipe, but you know, it's cool. It rewards you for playing an expensive Commander. And what's not to love about that?
Would you like to read it for the people?
No, I will read it for the people. That makes sense.
I don't want to, but I'll do it.
I'll do it. So it's four black, black for a sorcery. All creatures get minus X until end of turn, where X is the greatest mana value of a commander you own on the battlefield or in the command zone.
All right, how about a rare or a mythic?
I'm going to go with Legion Loyalty. Legion Loyalty is six white, white for an enchantment, and all it says is creatures you control have myriad. Just as a reminder, myriad, when a creature with myriad attacks, for each opponent other than the defending player, you create a token copy of that creature attacking that player. So essentially, if you attack with an opponent with a myriad creature, it attacks all of your opponents at once. This card seems dumb, and I love it, and it's expensive, and it's splashy, and it does stupid things, and I'm all for it.
It is very splashy, and it is a card that I think will probably end a decent number of Commander games, but it's kind of what an 8-mana card should do.
Oh, if it doesn't, you screwed up somewhere, right?
Yes. Well, I thought about a lot of the kind of dumb and busted cards that let me play with my opponent's cards, which I love to do. And I have a lot of Commander decks that are going to get some updates with the set, but I chose something that I want to draft and build around that looks cool. It's Wizards of Fae. Wizards of Fae is 3 and a blue for a 3/3 human wizard. It has myriad, and it says instant and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast, and you may cast sorcery spells as though they had flash. So basically, when you attack with this, assuming you're in a four-player game, it will create two other copies, and during that combat, you can cast all your instants and sorceries for 3 cheaper. That just seems like a cool little challenge.
This is a really cool card. I think I would love to play this even in Commander. I have a flavor question for you, though, Dave. You play a lot of D&D.
Okay.
I was clued in by someone who plays D&D that this is the wrong color. This shouldn't be blue. It should be red.
So they are the Red Wizards of Fae. That is true. But, you know, in Magic, this is just kind of a blue card. So if you notice, they're wearing red robes in the picture. It's just that Magic Red and D&D Red aren't necessarily the same thing.
I'm just saying, if you Google Wizards of Fae, it pulls up the Red Wizards of Fae. And this could be a red card. This could be a red card. Yeah. Just saying.
Maybe that should be a blue-red hybrid mana. Maybe that's where we should be. We'll be introducing the whole thing into the set.
They had the whole D&D flavor and the whole D&D team that could help them just punt it.
All right. Well, I had not gotten to play with the set yet. I did not pre-release with the set, but I am definitely looking forward to getting into it and firing off a couple drafts at some point. We'll see what the arena version of the set looks like at some point. But yeah, I don't know. Feels pretty good to me.
Yeah. I did not get to either because I was supposed to be at a wedding. And due to reasons, I had to isolate. But I would love to draft this once or twice. I didn't get to draft Commander Legends, and this seems super fun.
I didn't either. I'm sitting on Commander Legends in my closet, just casually waiting. All right, before we go, I wanted to talk a little bit about Wordle. I am a Wordler. I try to Wordle every day. So far, I've played 149 different days of Wordle. I have not missed one yet. I've gotten it within my 6 guesses. So if you haven't played this, you can just search for Wordle. But this is a Magic podcast, and so what we're talking about is the Magic version of Wordle. It's called Enchant Worldle. That's right. It's at enchantworldle.com. It's Enchant World with an L-E.com after it. And it is basically just guess a Magic card. You put in a guess, and then it tells you how close you are on mana value, colors, rarity, type and super type, subtype, and then the set and year that the card came out, and you have 20 total guesses to narrow it down. It's really, really, really hard, and it is right up our alley. I've been really enjoying it. How about you?
You clued me into this, well, technically yesterday as of this recording, this podcast. I just realized it's past midnight, so we have a new Wordle. I was going to be really cool and get use the same guess, but turns out I didn't realize the time. I love Wordle. I have missed some. I am not as good as you. I also try to do it at like midnight or 3 a.m, so probably shouldn't try to do that then. It's going to be a great daily time sink. I love it. Like already I'm going to try to figure out what the today's Wordle is, because I definitely screwed up.
So, all right.
More the merrier. Another one I would like to point out, as we said earlier, we're always asking for a pronunciation guide from Wizards of the Coast when we talk about cards. This actually had a real life example this past weekend. So there was a Modern 10K that was the top eight was broadcast from DreamHack Dallas this weekend. It was great. Get to see some like really throwback kind of amateurish in a good way. We're putting on a play type of bootstrapping of streaming and commentary. Loved it. But there was a point where two Jun players are playing in the top four, and they both played Zayatora's Proving Grounds. And the commentators couldn't figure out how to pronounce Zayatora. I don't know either. I'm just doing it based on how it's spelled out. I actually don't know how it's actually pronounced. So this is another plea, Wizards. If we're going to be back into real-life magic with real-life magic cards, just please release a pronunciation guide. Take, like, the 3 days. Hire some poor intern. Get a linguist. I don't know. Just, like, give us a pronunciation guide. Because I really would like to know how to pronounce all of these weird fantasy names.
Yeah, I have been assuming it's Zayatora. That's my headcanon. So, you know, we even have a disagreement on that. This set has a bunch that are difficult to pronounce. I totally agree. I am willing to be that intern. If I will make a spreadsheet of all of the tokens that don't match the color identity of the card that creates them, I will definitely put together a pronunciation guide for each set. I just need somebody from Wizards to talk to me and tell me how to pronounce the words. I'll record a video. I'll do all kinds of stuff. I just, we want to help here at the Memory Jar. This is the kind of thing that we do. So please, Wizards of the Coast.
Like, I'll seriously, you could be correct. We're never going to know. I could be Zayatora. The I could be silent. Anyway, we could go on about this all night.
It's true. That's the crazy thing. We will never know. So again, in the immortal words of Jerry Maguire, help me help you. All right. Thank you for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. We would love your feedback. Also, please tell us what cards you want to remember. If you haven't checked out the Magic Card Dictionary, visit us on Twitter and check it out. It is our link. We created a dictionary of terms used for types of cards and non-keyworded abilities, and we want your feedback on it. We've already added a ton of listener suggestions, and we still have some more to go. Also, I will be sure to retweet the token spreadsheet again when I update it for this set. So check that out. Tell us if there's anything we missed.
Yes. Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMY Company. That's company with a K. Also, his wedding is this weekend, so hopefully I still don't have COVID going up to his wedding. So congratulations to Chris. And until next time, make sure you don't fail your initiative roll. And whatever you do, swear to goodness, please do not split the party. Don't split the party. Have a fantastic time. We'll see you soon.